From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
If this entire world's an overpriced, hard-to-find copy of Mein Leben als Brettspieler that you found on eBay, well, we're here to badly translate those German instructions for you as a part of episode 78 of The Dice Men Cometh on the 16th of July, 2015.
Woo!
I know I've got the date right today, Garth, but thank you for checking your iPhone behind the scenes while I was doing that.
Someone needs to know what's going on.
It fills me with confidence, it really does, about what is happening this evening with Trent, Mark and Garth.
And I'm Mark.
I'm Garth as well.
And he's Trent. And tonight on the show, we are going to have Kickstarter. We're going to have games that scale and games that don't even. We're going to talk about what we've been playing. We're going to talk about our fabulous competition brought to you by Airy 52. They've been so generous. Those fantastic games you can win.
Area 52.
Okay. And I think we might relive some of the selected highlights from last week's most amazing show.
Oh, look.
That was brilliant.
That competition that we threw on the spur of the moment was great. And those winners, we're just waiting to hear back from them.
I think we'll talk about it next, all right? Okay? What happened last week. But let's begin with a metal salute from Metal Allegiance and their song, You Can't Kill the Devil. They're right, you know, you can't.
Yeah!
That's what I call a big rock finish, boys and girls. Metal Allegiance is the name of that band. And if it sounds like Old Testament ripping off Slayer, that's because that's exactly what it is. It's got members of Pantera, Anthrax, Machine Head, Dillinger Escape Plan, Sepultura, recycling old riffs into a new album that's due in September. And it kicks the show off tonight. The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Trent, Mark and Garth. And I suppose, first up, we have to kind of address the elephant in the room. Mark?
Hey! Can we do a Will Wheaton and just blame the producer?
So, look, we do this show live every Thursday night from the studios of Edge Radio, but in case you didn't know, it also gets edited up into a podcast. And we pull that audio off the Edge Radio server, which unfortunately crashed last week, and so we weren't able to get an episode of the podcast version of the show out to our subscribers on iTunes. So,
was it because your metal was too awesome? Or was it because we were just too funny? I don't know. What's the reason behind it?
The technical reasons that got emailed to me were basically that. Yeah. Both of those things. So okay. I guess we can only apologize and maybe... Should we do a recap on what people missed?
Well, I actually have a sneaking suspicion that it may have been one of the three people in this room. Because you know what? One of the three people in this room left halfway through the show.
That's true. That is true.
The second half of the show was freaking awesome.
We had a special
and maybe,
guest in.
Maybe that person felt a bit threatened that because that such awesome break went to air, that maybe their job was at risk. Who knows?
So, a job. So I get paid for this. There's another thing you haven't been telling me about this gig.
So we had a special guest in, a friend of ours by the name of Tanya, who gets involved in all sorts of the sort of new generation of RPGs, games like Goblin Quest and Dungeon World. We were talking about those. We're going to get Tanya back in. But look, she sounded so awesome. We thought we'd sack Garth. And the other thing that you missed last week, if you weren't able to download it, is that I blatantly called Garth a racist.
You did, yes.
For not liking Samurai. I mean, all in all, it was one of the best shows we've ever had.
I thought it was radio gold.
Yeah, but like so much in life, you had to be there.
Although we have had requests to redo it. Joel Smith hit us up on Facebook and asked for us to redo it like a movie reboot.
Okay.
You may get your wish one day, Joel.
And didn't someone else mention that we should act it out as puppets?
Gary von Garymeister.
That's
right. Yeah, us for a reenactment with sock puppets. I don't think that'd be too hard, actually.
No. Well, Mark, you're constantly accused of being a bit of a muppet or a puppet.
We just have three socks. One complains about losing all the time. Another one plays shit music. And the third contributes nothing.
There you go. I've got a sock right now. All three, even.
Hey, while we're on the subject of Facebook, can someone please change the picture of me that's on there at the moment? And who did that? I'm sick and tired of... every second week I go onto Facebook, someone's Photoshopped my picture onto something else, and I'm tired of it. Stop. Elephant in the room?
It just fitted the picture so well.
All right.
You're just such an angry cyclops.
So I think we should do a Facebook, a little post where we put his face on, I don't know, Kim Kardashian's body or something. I think that'd be quite nice.
Yeah.
And actually, look, speaking of Facebook, we should also mention our Dice Men Cometh blatant self-promotion, mm-hmm. which is ongoing on Facebook, where you can win copies of...
Dead of Winter, Sheriff of Nottingham. You can also do Love Letter and Coup. Talk about four amazing games.
I'll say.
With thanks to Airy Fairy 52, no, Area 52, who are moving their shop from their current premises up to 104 Elizabeth Street. That will mean something to anyone who's in Hobart.
Yes.
It's where the old Snow Gum shop was.
Hmm.
But
check out their Facebook page as well, because they're giving constant updates on how the move is going and also listing all their specials and what have you, which is great.
Actually, my mother went in there the other day to spend a gift voucher that I'd given her, because I get
you
points.
You gave your mother a gift voucher for a nerd shop.
They sell books downstairs.
Okay.
And that way I can get the points and then I can get... See? Double win. And... she walked into the wet cement outside in the footpath.
Oh, dear. So all you've got to do to go on to win one of these games from Area 52 is get onto the Dice Man Cometh's Facebook page and like one of our designated posts to go into the draw.
And the most recent one is Head Smashathon 2015. Mark, how's the noggin?
Another highlight of last week's show that if it wasn't for the video, it would have been lost forever. Damn that video.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get the show started properly with what we've been playing lately. Next on the Dice Man Cometh. The One by Miss Destiny on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. The Dice Man Cometh, talking tabletop games, and we've been playing some of those lately, so we thought that for a change we might talk about them.
Yeah, but we're going to do something different. We're going to talk about two games this week. But let's start with the one that we've been playing probably the most of, because it's the quickest and the easiest, and that's Red 7.
And we should point out that, of course, both of the games that we're talking about tonight are by...
Carl
Chudyk.
Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know, that's how I pronounce it.
Chudyk?
Carl Chudyk.
Chudyk.
Let's just call him CC.
Chudyk.
Designer of, amongst other things, Glory to Rome, celebrated as one of the greatest card games ever in our hobby. Impulse, Flowerfall, Motani, is that how you say that one?
I guess so. I've got that one coming on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Red 7. Tell us all about it.
Exactly right. Well, it was also co-designed by Chris Sislik, who did We Didn't Playtest This At All. And the various expansions, and also Meow, which I had the chance of playing at BorderCon, and then also everyone's favourite Win, Lose, or Banana.
Yes.
Which is a mammoth three-card game.
I have a copy of that.
Yeah?
It came free. Came free with one of my copies. And no, it was actually, I got it as a prize in the Dice Tower Christmas Generosity Geek List thingy a couple of years back.
And very quickly, Chris himself. Very quickly, how does one play Win, Lose, or Banana?
So you deal out the three cards. And then you find out who's won.
Yeah,
and the person who holds the card who win.
The thing is, when I was reading about this, the game originally was just win or lose, and you have two cards, and if you flip over and yours says win, you win. But then they added in the banana variety, which means if you get the win card, you still win, but then you have to figure out who's got the banana card.
There you go.
I think it's called adding flavour.
So anyway, Red 7. Now, Red 7 is this little small card game. I've got only 49 cards. It was published by Asmodee Games in 2014, so it's only last year. Plays 2-4. Now, before we get into this, I'm just going to give you a quick list of what this card game has been up for in terms of awards, because it's done pretty damn well. So, 2014, Golden Geek Best Card Game nomination. 2014, Golden Geek Best Family Board Game nomination. 2014, Golden Geek Best Innovative Board Game nomination. 2014, Golden Geek Best Party Board Game nomination. And then 2014, Meeple's Choice nomination. So, it doesn't actually won anything, but it's had a lot of nominations, which... and what I found was quite... you know, interesting about this was that it scaled board games and card games and innovation games. So, you know, it's certainly, you know, thrown a bit of a cat amongst the pigeons and had a lot of widespread attention, which has been great.
It's almost like it can't win any of those awards because it's so small and unassuming.
Yeah.
Almost.
Exactly right.
Yet not small enough to win like your quick and dirty 5-minute game, because it does sit in that middle ground of a quick card game that has some tactical depth.
Definitely. So what is it? It is a game where all you've got is one deck of cards. There are 49 of them. There are 7 suits in the colours of the rainbow, and each there is one for each colour numbered 1 through to 7. So 7 decks, 7 suits, 7 colours numbered 1 through to 7. And really, the rules are very, very simple. All you need to be doing at the end of your turn is winning the game. Doesn't that sound simple?
Pretty much.
Yeah, so look, the way it starts is everyone gets dealt. Do you want to guess how many cards you get dealt in red 7?
3.
Well, you get 7, but you also get 1 face up on your table, which is your palette, which is basically your starting card. It's the card that you will then use to see if you're winning the game, and you'll add cards to it as the game progresses. But then, basically, on your turn, you've only really got three things that you can do. One is you can take one of the 7 cards from your hand and play it to your palette, which is your individual player tableau. Or you can play a card to the canvas, which is the central deck of cards, which is the rules that you're playing. And the rules are what make this game really interesting, and it adds a lot of variety to it. And the third thing you can do is both. You can add a card to the main canvas, so you're altering the rule that you play by. And then you add a card to your individual tableau, your palette, to make sure that you're winning the game. It sounds really easy when you explain it. However, every time I've taught this to new players, it's always taken 1 or 2 rounds, maybe even a game, before it actually clicks. Because it sounds really simple until you then look at the cards. Because as well as having 7 different suits, 7 different colours, 7 different numbers, each colour also has a different rule attached to it. Yeah, so
this is a common feature of Carl Chittick's
games. Cards are used in multiple ways.
Yeah, and usually the first round that you play is a little bit disorientating.
Exactly right. So the great thing is once you've had that first round, it starts to make sense. And again, I think that's a bit of a theme with Carl's games, is that the mechanic of it does make sense after you've had that first little couple of rounds. And look, I really, really like the fact that it was simple. It's a small box. It's one deck of cards. I've taken it on plenty of plane trips over the last couple of months because I've been on dozens of them. You can teach it really quickly. It plays from 5 minutes to 20 minutes, depending on a couple of variations that it comes with, so you can expand your use out of it. It's good. It's fun. It's simple. It's all ages. And I really, really love it.
I called this Uno on steroids, and I actually meant that as a compliment.
Yeah. Yep.
Because it's so stripped down and simple to play, and I meant what I said in the little blurb about the show. This should be in every kid's Christmas stocking this year.
Yeah, for me, it's my go-to filler of choice because...
But it's not just a filler. Yeah, like, exactly. You've actually got to think.
It's a filler in terms of time that you can sit down and you can play it at the start of the night, at the end of the night, between games. But it gives you, as I said, that tactical depth that actually gets your mind going, where you feel like you're actually playing a gamer's game as opposed to a silly kiddie game.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, we played it a couple of times at BorderCon, and I was speaking to quite a few people there, and some people just go, no, I'm not going to play this at the end of the night because it was a bit too brain-burning.
So this is very much Carl
Chudik's
wheelhouse, these tableau-building card games with these quite simple mechanics. The cards do multiple things, which makes it a little bit counterintuitive to learn at first, but it rewards you with deeper strategic play. There's combos, there's interaction, there's asymmetrical play. You get that with all of his game, and you certainly get all of that with the other game of his we've been playing lately, which is Innovation.
Yeah,
one of
absolutely.
Your favorite, probably one of your long-time favorites.
Yeah, look, I've had this for a long time, and it was difficult to get it to the table at start because it does have depth, and it does have some confusion in the rules, and again, cards are doing multiple things. So, although when you say the rules, it's quite simple because there's really only 4 things you can do on your turn, and you get to do 2 actions. So you can draw, you can play a card. Once a card's down, you can play its action. which in the first version was called using the dogma of the card, what's on the card. But then, of course, to add more confusion, they brought out a second edition where they've changed all the terminology. The fourth thing you can do is, in the old version, it was called achieving. In the new version, it's called dominating, where you're basically taking one of these scoring cards.
And we should say that in case you haven't played this, this is a civilization building card game. You're building technologies through the ages.
Yeah, although you don't really feel like you've built a civilization at the end. You're sort of moving through a civilization.
That's an abstraction. The theme that's pasted onto it.
Yeah, but the cards are stacking up and doing lots of things. So all the cards have symbols. You've got 6 or 7 different symbols, and whether you can play actions and whether other people get to play those actions as well depends on who's got the most symbols or how many symbols you've got. But I love how it builds, and it starts off with quite simple things and gets to more and more complex things. There are these 10 ages, and I don't even know that I've ever seen any of the age 10 or even age 9 cards, because the game sort of ends by then. But the couple of even age 7 and age 8 cards I've seen were so powerful, it was crazy.
Well, that was one of the things I've noticed, and look, I've only played it maybe 3 times with you guys, is that I found some cards when they came out in even age 3 or age 4 were just so overly powerful that they had a chance to make the player with that card scream ahead, you know? Because another one of the things I noticed is you've really got to have a bit of luck on your side to get that card to be able to screw the other player over.
Yes.
Because a lot of the time, I find that my card just didn't have the strength to be able to stop a player who was just on a rampage.
I agree that that's a problem with this game.
I love the amount of player interaction in this game. There's so much player interaction. And really, to be successful, you have to be stealing other players' good cards. And that's the thing. It's that focus of, oh, I've got all these really interesting cards I can play. But in fact, most of them don't do the thing you need to do, which is score points.
Yeah, but I like the fact that, you know, with the symbols that you're talking about, is that you've really got to keep an eye out on everyone else's sort of tableau just to make sure, oh, have you got enough trees or have you got enough castles or this or that? Because what I'm going to do is going to impact, you know, player 2, 3, or 4. But I do think that, yeah, the last time we played, particularly Mark, which was a 4-player game,
yes,
there was you, there was daylight, there was some other form of daylight, and then there was the other 3 people. Yes. It was just an absolute mark wash.
And I, look, because I have played this...
yuck.
I like that one.
Is the mark wash the thing that clears up the itch?
I hope so.
Look, I do love this game, and I have played it a lot. And I remember I introduced it to a friend of the show, Carl, as a 2-player. And after I think the very first time I played it was 3 or 4, and it was just chaos, crazy. And everyone was like, oh, no. Then I played it as a 2-player, and it played brilliantly. And it would probably be, I reckon, my favourite 2-player game, because it's much more strategic, because, you know, you're counting the symbols, and you're going, okay, I've got to work on my towers. I've got to get some more towers. Oh, no, he's got some trees. And you sort of feel like you're building, whereas the chaos of a 3- and 4-player game, it is much more random because you've got lots of cards coming into the mix.
I should also say that I think one of the reasons that you found it difficult to get to the table was that your first edition copy of it looked, frankly, pretty fugly.
Yeah, look, it's such an interesting thing. And I guess, you know, talking about Carl Chudik, if you've ever seen the first edition of Glory to Rome, it's got these cartoony pictures which totally belie what a serious game it is. And then, of course, the new edition, the Black Box edition, came out, which is looking very stark and very dramatic, and people were saying, oh, take us back to the cartoony edition. Similarly with Innovation, the first one is just so abstract-looking and very bland. The new edition has all this really lovely artwork, but I don't know why they thought they would need to change the terminology.
Well, at least you can actually buy a copy of Innovation. Yes, because Glory to Rome is absolutely impossible to find.
Exactly right.
Because I believe one of the companies behind it got bankrupted or something. It's lost. But the mechanics in Glory to Rome have been re-implemented in a couple of Carl
Chudik
games. Mott and I on Kickstarter, and also Uchronia, I believe it's pronounced, are pretty much Glory to Rome with a different theme. I should also say that there's a deluxe expansion or a deluxe version of Innovation, another one coming from Asmodee Games maybe later this year, and more expansions for that put into that box as
well. Yeah, because there are 2 expansions for Innovation. I have one. I've only played with it once or twice because I feel like there's so much depth in the base game that I've hardly even scratched the surface. Yeah. And I've probably played it 20 times.
But the great thing is it still only plays in about an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't overstay its welcome. Yeah. You know, we played Glory to Rome at BorderCon, and that Felt like it played a little bit longer, but that was a learning game for most of us. I just really like what this guy does with cards. You know, the fact that he manages to turn one card into four or five things. When I was doing my research, I found out it's called the Action Point Allowance System that his cards employ, meaning you've got a certain number of actions. You can do them one time, multiple times, as long as you don't exceed the maximum number of actions you have.
But it was innovation, and this problem where it's fantastic as a two-player game, but not so good with any more, that got us thinking about games that scale up and down the number of players that you've got, the ones that do it well, the ones that do it maybe not so well. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that next as we continue to talk crap about tabletop games on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This is a show called The Dice Men Cometh.
It's insightful crap.
Lisa Crawley, what would I give... Which brings us to, well, about this point now, really, on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. The Dice Men Cometh, talking tabletop games.
Hey, Trent, before we get on, I learned two really interesting things last night in my research.
Interesting, you say?
Totally nothing to do with this topic, but they're just burning a hole in my mind, and I've got to get them out there.
Okay.
The Seven Wonders app. It's in open beta testing.
It's actually closed. You can get on board. Get in.
Oh, no!
I've tried that.
Oh, damn.
It goes on and it says full, and then it says full in French, and then it says full in German. Look, just to really rub it in.
It's okay. The second thing is more important.
And iOS is my gig, Mark.
Okay. Yeah. The second thing, though...
And also, I'm not about to play more Seven Wonders than what I absolutely have to. Now, this is probably one thing that was missed in last week's shows, seeing as we couldn't get it out there. Coming up at the Hobart Game Society's Winter Games Fest as a part of DICON, right, in August, I'm running a Seven Wonders tournament.
Wow.
And the reason I've agreed to run the tournament is because I've got no chance of winning. Thank you very much.
Excellent.
All right. What's the second thing burning a hole in your brain? The second thing is the Wavy Bob is the It Cut of 2015. Did you know that?
What the frig are you talking about?
The Wavy Bob. It's the It Cut. They're all wearing it. I'm getting my haircut on Tuesday. I'm thinking about going the Wavy Bob.
Who's Wavy Bob?
Wavy Bob is a style of hair.
Is it?
Yeah.
And you have enough hair to do this?
No, but...
Most of it's on your back.
You can talk, sir.
Can we talk about something we know something about?
Okay. Yes. No, but that's important to know.
That's creeped us all out. We're talking about games that scale. Basically, games that might play well with a certain number of players, but not so well with another number of players. And Garth, this was your topic, so I don't know. You tell us what it is you want to talk about, because I've frankly got no idea.
Well, look, I mean, it was our last game of innovation that set the hamster wheel turning, because Mark keeps saying how awesome this game is as two-player. I've never played it two-player. I've only ever played it as three and four. And I go, yeah, I like this game. But when Mark wins by a million points...
Yeah.
I lose the sort of faith in Mark's judgment even more so. But look, really, it got me thinking, why do designers put really variable player numbers when a lot of the time my concern is designers are offsetting their game and thinking there'll be more people, therefore it'll be more fun, even though it's less game?
Well, you see, I actually find that the reverse is true, because so many games that I'm interested in will tell me 3-4 players, and that's it.
Okay.
All right, and I actually kind of get a little bit annoyed. If I see on a box 3-4 players, that kind of gives me the irrits.
Mm-hmm.
I feel ripped off that the game isn't better designed to scale down to two or a little bit further. That just seems very, very narrow to me.
Well, maybe we should talk about that.
But I think that's conditioning from when I was a kid playing Cluedo and Mousetrap and stuff, where, you know, this stuff, it just wasn't an issue.
Exactly.
You know, it just wasn't entered into.
Yes. But look, I had a look and I just thought it would be a great opportunity to talk about a few games that we think scale really, really well.
Yes, because a good game should tolerate variety in players.
Yeah, it should, but I also think you've got to be able to flip that and say, let the game stand on its merits and just be happy with what it is, which might be a really great two-player game.
Garth, the elephant in the room has a contrary point of view.
Okay.
Are we going to go on about that all night?
Sorry. Nice haircut, though, elephant.
Yes.
That's next Tuesday.
Oh, sorry.
The mammoth in
Wavy
the room.
Wavy Bob next Tuesday. right. Yeah, the beard needs a trim. It's okay. It's coming. So, yeah, look, I want to take umbrance to what you've said, because I think sometimes a game is so good for a reason, because it's designed for a certain amount of players, and to do anything else with it, you actually break the way it works. Now, you're right. Designers can then go the extra yard and make changes to the system to accommodate more players. And, you know, some of the clever ones use the double-sided board technology to make different boards for different players. A great example that I came up with is Small World. How, you know, you've got one board for 2 and 3, you've got one board for 4 and 5. It works really well right across that range that I
Yeah, well, Cyclades is another one like that, which I wrote down because it's got... It's got quadruple board technology because with the new Titans expansion, it goes from playing 2 to 5 with the base game up to 2 to 6 now. But it also allows team play, which is a really different dynamic. And we haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, I'd like to nominate two that do the scaling really, really well. And yep. I think an obvious one is Twilight Imperium.
Yes.
Where it scales from 3 players to 6. And literally what you do when you have more players is you make the universe that you're playing in bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, and look,
because it's modular tiles as you build the game board.
And I think that works really well. An example for me, and I pretty sure I haven't got this to the table with you guys, and I'd love to get it one day, is Uwe Rosenberg's Bonanza, the bean trading game, where it plays from 2 to 8.
The bean trading game. I've never played this.
It is good.
It really
it
has
is good.
Gamer cred.
Yeah.
And again, it's like, I guess it's like Glory to Rome, in that it's got this naff cartoony artwork, but people rave about it.
But
this
it does
game.
It does have the two-player experience, where there are a few different rules, is very different from 3 and up, where it's all about the horse trading, or in fact, the bean trading.
Yeah, I've always heard your two-player experience is quite different, Gar.
But you shouldn't talk about his solo.
It does scale. And
not just talking
I'm just
about Pathfinder,
I'm
Mark.
Just going to totally ignore that comment. And it's good to see that Uwe Rosenberg has taken that scalability across to some of his other games, because Agricola is another one that scales really well, mainly by the use of the different player boards, where you set out different cards, different amount of turns and things like that in Agricola. I haven't done it in played Caverna yet still, but I'm sure it does it in that. La Havre is another one. And I think another genre that does the scaling well are the deck building games.
Yeah, well,
usually because you're changing the amount of decks or the amount of cards in decks.
Sure. Well, look, I guess my main concern is I see a lot of games scale down to 2 that probably shouldn't.
Yes.
You know, and I think Seven Wonders is a classic example of that, which Trent and I, we played this a couple of times a few years ago, where you're playing the dummy third player,
man,
and it's just not fun.
I hate this mechanic in board games more than anything else, and that is the dummy third player.
We might have that tonight.
I hate this more than the whole victory point thing.
Yeah.
You know, just the collection of abstract points is the purpose of the game. Having to have a dummy third player that everybody manipulates just... Ooh.
Yeah, I think it's a really poor design choice. Why not just say the game plays 3 and above? I mean,
because,
I don't get it.
Because, Garth, you get some people... I'm not looking at you. Mm-hmm. Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm.
Who say, why doesn't this play less than 3?
Well, let me come back at you with a game that I think does it really, really well, and it's brand new, and that is Lewis and Clark, because that plays 1 to 5.
Yeah.
Mm. Right? And admittedly, the solo variant does have a couple of extra components, and there's a slightly different rule set for the solo version, which I haven't played.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right? Because I have a life and friends. I'm not that sad.
Speaking of solo games, if we look at the whole genre of co-op games, now there's generally a bunch of games that have no issues with scaling because, as Scott Nicholson, I think, once famously said, you've got X amount of fun in that game, and basically what you're doing is dividing X by the number of players. So it's the same amount of fun, it's just how many people it's spread around.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it can be, you know... One person can do it, 2 can do it. You can play with multiple players. You can play with 1, as in multiple players per player. You're all doing the same thing.
I agree, but again, I would much rather spend some time with my friends and, you know, be this a social activity.
Yes.
But I also want to touch on Trent's point, which is, again, another game that really scales well between 1 and 5 is K2. You know, the first time I played that, it plays... Just a really nice solo variant. It's got the double-sided technology where you can you can choose to play solo hard or solo easy, and I got absolutely obliterated by this game, but it wasn't detracting from the experience because the game itself is so solid.
Were you solo hard?
I was solo soft.
Okay. Speaking of multiple board technology or multiple island technology, one of our favourite games, two-thirds of this room, Samurai, with the where you put in the different number of islands for different players. I think that's a great, quite innovative concept for its age in the
1800s. Well, I looked into this game because, you know, for both of you who heard last week's episode, I got, you know, wiped off the map with my accusations of racism. But I was reading that a lot of players think this is much better as a two-player game, and it just becomes too confusing and too, I don't know, too much in the chance category when it gets to four, because ultimately the last third of the game, all you're really doing is choosing the best out of a lot of whatever's left. You don't really have a huge amount of input.
We all know why it is you don't like this game, Garth.
Yes.
And it's because you don't like Asians. That's the problem. Look, no, Mark, I'd like to pick you up on your point about co-op games being more scalable.
Yes.
I would actually dispute that.
Oh.
Because I cannot win Flashpoint, no matter how many players I throw at some of those maps that I've picked
up. But have you played it solo?
Because I haven't. I haven't. But look, perhaps I couldn't just play, you know, six different characters myself, which brings me to another sort of semi-co-op game, Letters from Whitechapel, which says that it plays 2 to 6. This is complete bullshit because...
Yep.
You've got one player who's Jack the Ripper in that and five cops who are chasing them. And the rules literally say one person's Jack the Ripper and depending on how many more of you, you just divide the 5 points up amongst yourselves. And it doesn't matter.
No, so, it's like, just a joke.
It could be playing with any number of people.
Yeah. Look, I want to tip my hat to Dead of Winter because Dead of Winter plays from 2 to 5. And you just think, why would you play a game like Dead of Winter, which has the trader mechanic when there's only two players? And the answer to that is that they've got the created content by John Gilmore, which is called the Prisoner Dilemma, which alters the rules slightly, which I thought was a really good dynamic. So basically what happens is both players get both a secret objective card and a betrayer card. Then there's three possible outcomes. If both of you have completed your secret objective and the main objective is completed, then everyone wins.
Mm-hmm.
If morale is at 0, both players lose if their secret, you know, ones haven't been completed. However, if morale is at 0 and one player has completed their exile card and the other one hasn't, then they win.
Oh.
And I haven't played this, but it sounds like it would be a good variant because, according to the threads on BGG, it has a lot of really positive feedback. And I think that's a way that games could potentially go if they're going to say they're playing by 2, because the thing I don't like, and I'm going to use Sulcan as an example because we've been playing this on BGA a lot, is the way Sulcan does it is it just removes your choices. It puts these little chips in certain gears that you can't do things all because you're playing 2 or 3 players, and that just infuriates me. I want to get some corn! And I can't afford the corn because there's a silly chip there.
Some dude in your cornhole again.
Exactly! And I just think that's really lazy design. Yeah. There's got to be a way to make it more enjoyable without taking away from the game. Yeah, maybe.
Well, you could have smaller cogs, bigger cogs, interchangeable cogs. Get with the cogs.
Well, of course, the thing about design and the number of players is this very quickly gets into math, and you're quite right in your initial point, Mark, and that the math just starts to break my head if I think about it too much. So it's a wonder that any games get designed at all, frankly.
Yeah. Well, we'll also talk about Star Realms. I mean, why would you put 3 decks together and play 6 players when it's clearly designed to be a 2-player game?
Yeah, and just because you say you can do it doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
And I think that was a classic lesson for us with that game.
Exactly.
Lucky for us, though, plenty of board games and card games do get designed, and a whole bunch of them are on Kickstarter right now. Mark's been checking it out to see if there's anything worth spending your money on. He's going to tell us all about that and give you a little shopping list in just a moment.
Yeah, and do you want to give us an update on where all your Kickstarters are? Because I got some really good news on mine today.
No, I don't, because it's embarrassing.
I got some really good news on mine today.
I'll have a look while the song's playing, all right? We'll get back to it. It's Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Tazzy's Violet Swells, Here Comes Yesterday is the name of that track, and it's the Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. We are getting ready to sign off and head out of the studio, but not before we check in with Mark and his little look-see at the Kickstarter website, which is full of all sorts of things that you can waste your money on.
It is certainly full, that's for sure. Although it's pretty empty as far as Aussie Kickstarters go this week. You know, the wave of Aussie Kickstarters has died down. One finishing off. It's got 2 days to go. We talked about it a little bit, and we even played it and had it on our Facebook page. Tavern Fame by Table Torrent Games, another one of the Brisbane mega tribe of game designers. It's got 2 days to go. It's already raised $16,500, and they're only after $9,500, so clearly it's been funded.
Good stuff.
A light game from them.
Excellent.
And look, the only other Aussie one of note, or at all, in fact, it's not of note, it's a pseudo trading card game called Kelvea, merging of sci-fi and fantasy, from a designer in Cairns. I'm guessing it's his first game. Mm. It's got 20 days to go. He's going for $20,800. He's still at zero, I'm afraid.
Don't hold back, Mark.
But look.
Don't hold back,
okay,
Mark.
Okay. This game, it's $130 for a fat pack, which is sort of like one half of the set or something.
Is that a starter set or something?
Sort of. It's confusing. He's got stretch goals right up to thousands. And look, I once bagged out a video of a post-apocalyptic card game, and it was another Australian thing. Well, I'll tell you what, the video that this guy made makes that post-apocalyptic game looks like Mad Max Thunder Road, because it is so bad. And he even incorporates the how to play in the launching video. If you can stay awake for the whole 6 minutes, I don't know how you do it. So steer clear of that one.
No, look, it's unfortunate. And I also am a bit concerned when you can't get a backer.
Just because you're Australian doesn't mean you're going to get cut slack, all right, with low production standards and that people are going to back your Kickstarter. It's a global marketplace,
Peeps. Absolutely. Yeah. And look, I want to talk about one outside Australia with a fantastic video. This is the way to make a video. This game is called Swords and Bagpipes. You're a Scottish clan leader in the medieval war of independence. So think Braveheart. There's subterfuge, there's betrayal, and it has an amazing video. It's got Highland dancers, and then this Russian guy comes on and does the worst pseudo Scottish Russian accent you've ever heard. But it's so eye-catching, ear-catching. It's a brilliant video. Go and watch this. Swords and Bagpipes. They're after 7,500. They've already raised 20 with 7 days to go. So it's clearly going to fund. It looks like actually a really interesting game, but it's a brilliant video. One that's a bit out of left field, but really I'm interested by. It's called 14 Days, a game about life with migraines. This game gives you an insight into living with migraines or some other chronic pain condition.
Yeah, like, are you just backing a hammer? And you just
no.
It's a lot like doing this show.
It's a bit of a story game, but it's also a bit like a day planner because you've got your activities for the 2 weeks. That's why it's called 14 Days. And it's great to plan all your stuff and squeeze everything, but then what happens when you're struck down with a bout of chronic pain and you've got to reschedule your life? And, you know, it's okay to laugh about these things, but people have to deal with this. And I think this topic is fascinating. Now, it's already been, it's over 100% funded. It's only $25. Have a look at it. 14 Days, it's called. Trent, this is the one that'll interest you.
All right.
World War Cthulhu, the Cold War. Okay. So it's from Cubicle 7, who've done some other World War Cthulhu products based in the Second World War. And this is a 1970s Cold War setting for the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. It's only 13 poons for the PDF or 25 poons for the physical book. They've raised over 30,000. They're only after 7,500 with 5 days to go.
Very quickly on the topic of Cthulhu, has anybody noticed that...
Pluto!
Yeah. The guys who are in the control room for the Pluto explorations, one of the unofficial names for one of the dark patches on the surface of Pluto, they're calling it Cthulhu.
Nice. Fantastic.
It's not official. It's not official.
Now,
not yet.
This next one, why hasn't someone thought of this before? Atoms as Hexes. The game is called Molecular, the strategy chemistry tile game. Now, I've got to admit, I'm a chemistry nerd from way back. I was going to do a chemistry degree until I got distracted by alcohol and women. But this has
if only they were hexes too.
Yeah, that's right. They put a hex on me, all right. This has the atoms as hexes, and you're making organic compounds. But it's got other cards in there that do stuff, and you're competing with, against other labs to make better stuff. But it's really fascinating concept. It's the first game for a group called Inside the Box from Oxford, UK. Of course, where would a game like this come from but Oxford? It has 12 days to go. Now, it's made 7,000 of the 15,000, so it's only halfway there. It's only 25 poons. Plus £5 shipping to Australia. I'd say get on this. One more quick one. Deception, Murder in Hong Kong. This is like a mashup of Concept and The Resistance.
Okay.
And this is like taking Mysterium and actually making it into a murder-solving game. Where one player...
Which is what it purports to be.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah.
So one player is the forensic scientist. One player is the murderer. And all other players are investigators. Now, the forensic scientist is playing cards and tiles to give clues in a concept-style manner to the other players, trying to help them work out who the murderer is, where it was, what the weapon is. The murderer is obviously mixed in amongst the investigators, trying to throw them off the track, but they don't know who he or she is.
I like this.
It's so really
Cluedo concept revolutions.
Look, it's... They're after 20,000. They've made 38. It's only got 4 days to go, so get on it quick. It's published by Grey Fox Games. It's got the seal of approval from the Dice Tower. It's the publishing arm of Cool Stuff,
what's
Inc.
What's it called again?
It's called Deception, Murder in Hong Kong. It's only $30 plus 15 shipping. And the only other one I was going to mention, Trent, was High Frontiers.
Yes, which I backed. Well, it's got 16 days to go. It's well and truly past its...
Yeah, 104,000 of the 14,000.
They reckon they're going to deliver this in August. So that's
which August?
Yeah. That's next month. Yeah. It's not going to happen.
Look, okay. It looks absolutely awesome, and I know you told me only one more, but one more worth looking at. Police Precinct.
No.
The second edition is... It looks absolutely amazing. And you know they use it to train real cops.
They do not.
Yes.
That is crap.
But Brunstein...
I don't believe that for a second.
The chief, who is a real cop, he told me so.
All right.
Anyway, it's great. Get on it.
Trent.
Mm.
I remember you backed something in Kickstarter
apart from 2 years ago. Apart from High Front. Yeah, well, I've been talking about late delivery. Two rooms and a boo. Okay. The last update said that there were copies of the game in a container that was on a boat that was going from China to the US. So as far as I'm concerned, that's the wrong bloody direction. So they said that this was going to be delivered in June 2014. And that's when I backed it back in November 2013. Oh, guys.
Wow. One big deck of cards.
Yeah, two rooms and a boom. You know, a lot of podcasts and gamers have been talking about it, but you know, because it's one of those social deduction games like Coup or what have you. But now people are already moving on, and Spyfall is
It's going to be more like two booms and a thud. Really, it's just going to hit flat.
Two rooms and a
because Spyfall is the hotness when it comes to this kind of thing. But you might get it by the time you retire.
We're going to wrap the show up. Next week, we're going to talk to a local designer who's got himself a huge RPG available now on DriveThruRPG. His name is Craig Judd. We'll talk to him as a part of next week's show. And, I don't know, do some other stuff.
Look, you know what else is on Kickstarter that you've got to get behind? There's a brand of lifestyle clothing for tap dancers. It's called Tap That. Do you think they know what it actually means?
I'm just going to turn Mark's microphone off.
And the mullets of Hawaii. It's a copyrighted book.
Good job, Trent. I didn't even know that button existed.
Comes with controlling the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Catch you next week.
Bye.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.